one of my students was Marguerite Woods. So she started out in my program, which is called SAILS, Seniors Achieving Independent Living. And she decided she wanted more training, so she went into our intensive core training program and graduated from that program and went on to do a lot of other things. She is a motivational speaker. She's an entrepreneur. And she is very active. When I think I first met you, Marguerite, you were swimming among one of the things you did. But Marguerite is going to talk about some of her other activities of line dancing and doing ceramics and other things. So I'd like to introduce you all to Marguerite Woods, who is a graduate of my SAIL program and of our CORE program. And we're just happy that she's in Maryland doing all kinds of things and inspiring many people of all ages.
Wow, thank you, Ruth. That was a very nice introduction. Hello, everyone. I'm honored that Ruth asked me to speak on this call, and I'm very happy to talk about hobbies and how they have enriched my life as a blind person, a blind senior who became blind as an adult. So, of course, many people who have lost their sight could probably relate to the fact that life can seem a little bleak when you're in a position where the things that you've been used to and familiar with are no longer your experience. And for a short while, I really felt lost and just felt like, you know, my life had sort of come to an abrupt stop, and that was going to be the end of pleasure for me. But as Ruth said, I was a part of her SAIL program, and I started to learn some skills that helped to manage blindness and started to discover that there is a quality of life that I could continue, very different than when I was sighted, but very, very possible. And I went on to the CORE program. And so as Ruth said, I started off, when she first met me, I was swimming, which was a hobby I picked up as a blind person. And it's really funny to me because as a sighted person, I never got the hang of it. And as a matter of fact, I was pretty afraid. And so I started swimming, which was wonderful exercise, and it also helped me to be comfortable in my immediate space. So hobbies serve multiple purposes for me, and one of them is to help me to relate to my space in a joyful way, and it also helps me to focus deliberately on my environment. And so it really helped me as a totally blind person to get very comfortable in unfamiliar spaces. So,
okay, let me just interject here. If you've just joined us, if you would put your phone on *6, which is a mute mode, stars to the left of the 0, *6, then we won't hear your background noise. And if you want to join the conversation, then you would press *6 once again, and that would release you from the mute mode, and you would be able to say your name, and then the moderator, Marguerite, could recognize you. So that would help because I am hearing some background noise. So thank you so much for those of you that are on mute mode, and I hope the rest of you will do *6 and become on mute mode. Thank you. Sorry to interrupt, Marguerite.
Oh, that's quite all right.
Yeah.
So I was about to say that it led me to want to explore and enjoy other things that I thought of as hobbies. And I've always loved to dance. And so exercising, of course, is very important to me as well. And I always felt like if I had to exercise, I wanted it to be fun. And so I discovered something called line dancing. And for a while, it didn't seem that it was available to me, trying to find an instructor that didn't mind taking the time to help me visualize what they were instructing everyone else in the class to do. But I was fortunate enough to find someone who saw the challenge as an inspiring process for himself. And so I've been doing line dancing now for probably 3 years, and it's been a lot of fun. And the thing that I've enjoyed about it is I've learned to do it, but it's also been an opportunity for my instructor and those around me to learn another way to relate to people and share their experience in a very different way. So it causes everybody to have to listen more intently and really pay attention and become more articulate and visualize before they try to describe something. So all those skills are very valuable whether you're sighted or not, and I get to be a part of a process that helps people to get better at it because I'm the blind person that they're relating to. And from line dancing, I felt like I wanted to do something with my hands, something different than I'd ever done before. And I had an opportunity to spend about a year in India in 2011. And while I was there, for some reason, it just started to become clear to me that I wanted to play in the clay. And so when I came back to the United States, I started searching for ceramics class, and I was able to find one, and again, I found an instructor that was excited about teaching to a blind student, something she had never done before, and I've been with this class for quite a while. I've made some very wonderful pieces that are very functional and very usable, and the process is very enjoyable to me. Again, it helps me to relate to my environment, and it's tactile. And I just love it. It's a great way to relax, and I'm also creating something beautiful. So those two things are the main things that I'm doing right now. But another thing that I love to do is read. So I belong to a book club, and all the members of the book club are sighted. And fortunate for me, with Audible and the Bard program, I'm able to just about every book that we've chosen I've been able to get as an audio book. And so I find it stimulating and relaxing at the same time to be able to read books of all types, because I enjoy that, and then to be able to once a month sit with a group of women and share, you know, the experience of reading the book and talk about, you know, the different aspects of that book, and then to be a part of hosting my own meeting once a year. We have 12 members, so we each get to host a book club meeting once a year. So I've been able to do that, and so I get to use and show off my other skills. I get to prepare a dish for everyone, and I'm the hostess when they come, and, you know, I set up the conversation and sort of design and guide the way the meeting goes. And so it's just a wonderful opportunity for enjoyment, but to also allow other people to know that as a blind person, you can have a full and very rich experience, not just in the blind community, but with the community at large. And so with that, I'm going to open it up, and if you have any questions or comments or whatever, I would be glad to entertain that.
Okay. Are there any questions? I have a question, which is, how did you go about finding the instructor? What kinds of things did you do to find instructors?
Okay, for the ceramics, I'll tell you about that one. Mm-hmm. I actually called the Baltimore Clay Works, which is a very, most people in Baltimore use clay works that are doing ceramics. And I called them and told them, you know, that I was interested. And when I started to tell them that I could not see, that I was totally blind, they started passing me around from teacher to instructor, and they would get back to me. And I was like, okay, this isn't working so well. But I didn't get upset, because I'm recognizing that not only am I learning to be blind, but so are the rest of the community. They're learning how to relate to blind people. So I understand how it feels a little bit awkward, and people are a bit, you know, shy about it. So I found out about a senior center in my neighborhood, and I found out that they were doing ceramics. I spoke with the director, and she said, yes, I could come to the class. And I just met the instructor, and when she found out that I was blind, she at first said to me she'd never taught a blind student, but if I was willing, so was she. And that's how our relationship got started. And she's excited and inspired to find different ways to help me to create. And so she loves art so much, and she wants everyone to experience creating art. And so that's what I think is the key, is that you find people who love what they're doing, and they automatically want to share it. And it doesn't matter to them whether you can see or not. They just want to know that you're excited about it and that you want to learn.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Joanne Johnson.
Hi, Joanne.
Hi. I have a question. You mentioned the senior center, which is a great idea to get started. I had an experience where I joined a senior center, and at first they told me I couldn't come there because you had to be independent and all that other kind of stuff. But mm-hmm. I let her know, you know, I'm a homeowner and I'm independent, and the only thing that I require from them, which I recommend for people, to know exactly what your needs are and know exactly what your rights are. So mm-hmm. I advised them that all I needed was a volunteer to take me around the yes. center and give me my mm-hmm. orientation, and then
exactly.
I would come back on a day on my own
right.
and go around and learn the facility on my own. So, you know, that's what I did. And I went into the instructors, and I told them exactly, you know, what I knew how to do and how they could help me, and they had no problems, you know, doing that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I appreciate knowing that. Yes.
Hi, I'm Ann West.
Hi, Ann. How are you?
I'm good. I'm in Connecticut. I know this is a little bit off topic, but I must tell you that I have recently become friends with a blind man from India, so that really kind of sparked my interest when you were talking about India.
Nice.
okay, I love to swim. Absolutely love it. I grew up on a lake, and I lived in the water in the summertime.
Okay.
Right now, I live fairly close to the YMCA.
Okay.
And, of course, they have a pool there.
Mm-hmm.
So I really would like to take advantage of that pool, but I am being stopped because, oh, my goodness, a blind person in the pool? Oh, no, no. They're not very open to it. And I don't know how to break that barrier.
Hmm. Are you going in with an instructor, or are you just going in as a person that just wants to get in the pool?
Well, I'm a good swimmer. So I'm not going in with an instructor. No, I would just like to go and use the pool when
okay.
they have the free swim. But they always say, well, you might bump into somebody or something. Nobody's going to know that you're blind. And that's true.
Right.
But, you know, we get along.
But one of the things I would share with you is when I was talking about I had to learn how to be blind, but also helping the people around me learning how to relate to blind people. So even though you're a good swimmer, if you start in a beginner's class, you will help them to get comfortable with you in their environment. I think that's important to them. You can't just walk in and do it because they're so uncomfortable, they won't even hear you or recognize that you are comfortable. But once you get in there and you start doing things and the people that are there see you, they start to recognize, yes, she can. Yes, she can do it. So they'll help other people to get comfortable with you being in the pool. And so it sort of spreads. Does that make any sense for you?
Yes, it makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah, try it that way, and I wish you a lot of luck with that, because that's what happens. The community is they don't know, they don't understand, and they can't fathom it. Because I was afraid, too, thinking that you can't do things if you can't see it. But I've learned
that's
not true, you know, but I had to have that experience. And Ruth's program at SAIL really helped me to start being able to do that. So, yeah.
Well, thank you for that insight. I've been blind all my life, and I just sort of go in full barrels, and sometimes you have to
right.
step back and start small.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I'm Jessica. I'm from South Carolina.
Hi, Jessica.
And I just wanted to say this is an awesome service.
Yeah.
This is my first time.
Wonderful. Welcome.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Does anyone else have some hobbies and pastime activities that you do that you'd like to share with the group?
I have a question.
Go ahead.
My name is Taryn Watson, and I'm in Fort Collins, Colorado.
Okay.
I was just wondering how, whenever you took the ceramics class, how did other people in that class react to you being blind? I kind of joined late, so I hope that you know, you haven't talked about that specifically.
Okay, well, you know, I think it starts off the same way every time for me. When I'm in an environment where people are not used to blind people, they're very tense, they're very afraid, they're like on guard. It's like, anybody ever been around a toddler when they first learn to walk and everybody's holding their breath, scared to death that the toddler's going to fall face down, and so everybody's ready to jump and save the child? So that's how they sort of treated me initially. But I'm comfortable in my own skin. I'm getting more comfortable in my own skin in unfamiliar places. So I don't let their tenseness, you know, cause me to be tense. And I just, you know, just continue to do what I can do and ask for whatever I need. And after a while, they just start to get more comfortable, and people are so relaxed around me now. And they, you know, some of them get a little put off because they think that you're so independent that you don't need their help or you don't want their help. And somehow our society has made it seem, you know, wonderful to help the helpless. Or those that can't do for themselves, but I'm not helpless. I just do things in a different way. And so it's almost like they have to have time to work it out in their own minds that you're not helpless. You're just doing the things you need to do very differently. And so it takes them a little time, but I'm patient with them. They think they're being patient with me. And so I'm patient with them, and as time goes on, they just relax more and more and more. And, you know, and then I'm also patient with the process for myself. And so I've been there a number of years, and so now I just come and go. They don't even, you know, and anybody that sort of is new and they start to grab for me, the people around me will go, oh, no, leave her alone. She's okay. She can do it. And so, So I hope that helped.
Yeah, thank you so much for answering my question.
Yes,
this is Jessica again.
Yes,
I was wanting to know, being that you went blind later in life, were you ever able to learn Braille? I know some older people are not able to do it because of, you know, neuropathy and all that kind of good stuff.
Yes, I was in the SAIL program, which is when I really learned Braille. And I'm not as speedy as a lot of my friends who have been blind for longer or, you know, they are really fast with it. I'm not that fast, but, yes, I can label and, you know, read my little notes and that kind of thing. And so, yes, Braille is very helpful to me.
Awesome, because I've been blind all my life, so I wasn't sure if you were able to learn Braille or not.
I was fortunate that I did not have neuropathy, so I can feel the dots, yes.
Awesome. Great.
Yeah.
Rebecca Irvin here from New Jersey.
Hi.
I would just like to add on the learning the Braille. I lost my sight when I was 53.
Okay.
At the beginning, I thought Braille was going to be very difficult for me because I could not grasp the concept of filling dots.
Yes.
But I did grasp it. I learned to love it, and now I'm a Braille instructor. And I love teaching it. So even though I learned it later on in life, and because I did not have neuropathy, it's fun. I found it to be a lot of fun. So is the pottery.
Yes.
In Jersey, we have a class here that teaches everyone in the class is visually impaired or blind. And pottery is my passion because I love it after I have finished the project and feeling just like I imagined it to look.
Yes.
And other people would look at it and say, wow, that's fantastic. And you're blind and did. I love it.
Uh-huh.
So I just
want to
encourage other people who are blind. And if you're an art lover, especially with art and pottery, mm-hmm. try your hands in it. You'll love it. You'll
yes.
love it.
I agree with you. Thank you for that. That's exactly how it felt to me. It's just wonderful. It really
yeah, it is.
Is.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
This is Estelle from Denver.
Hi, Estelle.
Hi. I came in a few minutes late, but I wondered if you had talked anything about Crafter's Corner.
Well, actually, no, I have not.
Okay. If you like, I can just give you some general information about it.
Sure.
Crafter's Corner is a group of blind people who teach blind people many different crafts, like knitting, crocheting, beading, and basket weaving, and many, many different things.
Mm-hmm.
They can teach it online, or they can teach it by phone. And I took two classes from them on the telephone. I am not totally blind yet, but I'm getting there, and I'm trying to learn some new skills. So
okay.
I took a class in knitting, where you knit around on this little plastic thing, you knit in a circle, and
sure.
I took a class in basket weaving, and I just really enjoyed it very, very much. So I just wanted to tell the information in case anybody's interested in any crafts like that.
Sure.
You can go to their website. It's Crafter's Corner, and both of those words are spelled with a K.
Okay.
K for Crafter's, K for Corner. Crafter's Corner.
Mm-hmm.
.com would be the
okay.
website. And if you want to call, you can call the lady who's in charge. Her name is Joyce Kane, and her phone number is 203-378-8928.
Okay.
I think they have like a $3 membership for the year. So
wow.
And other than that, they offer all kinds of classes, and I enjoyed the ones that I took. So maybe somebody else will find those helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Nice.
Okay.
Do we have any gentlemen on the line with us? Just curious to know.
They're quiet if they are.
Yes.
I also took many years ago, but I, again, it was adult education kind of thing, and I went with some friends, but we took a class in macrame, and so that was an interesting class to learn how to make different knots and to use different kinds of material to make different things with. So that to me was kind of fun to learn how to do. I think I prefer knitting. That's my specialty is knitting, so I do that more than anything else. But it is fun to try something new and see how far you can go with it and see the different dimensions of and what can be made with it. Sometimes it's very different items than you might originally first think.
Yeah, I've seen some of Ruth's knitting, and it's beautiful, absolutely gorgeous stuff that Ruth does. And it's funny that you mentioned macrame. Years ago, I used to macrame. I used to make holders for flower pots, and hadn't done that in many years. I'd forgotten about it. Thank you for that. I might have to revisit that. Any other questions? Or anybody want to share something about what they're doing, some different hobby?
Hi, this is Anne in Connecticut again.
Hi.
First of all, I know Joyce Kane very well. She's also in Connecticut. And I came to know her quite a few years ago, but I am not a crafty person. But you're talking about hobbies. I'm a ham radio operator, and I've been in it since I was 14 years old.
Okay.
And I have really made a lot of friends all over the world.
Wow.
Just talking to people on the radio, it's a lot of fun.
Mm.
And now, of course, we have a program that we can talk to people between computers as well. And also, you were talking about the Bell program. I'm going to be participating in it. I'm a transcriber, Braille transcriber, and I will be participating in the Bell program this summer. that we're going to have here.
Nice. Wonderful. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Another hobby that I'm interested in, or I think I'm going to be interested in it, I just went out for the first time a couple of weeks ago, is sailing.
Mm-hmm.
I live near, we have a wonderful inner harbor, and there's a Baltimore sailing group in that area, and they opened it up to anybody that's got disabilities. And so I went for their Saturday program, and I really enjoyed it. It was wonderful. So I'm seriously considering taking the course. They have a course, and they're willing to teach us as a blind person. So, and the funny thing is, I'm trying all these different things now that I'm a totally blind person that I may not have tried as a sighted person. I was, you know, a little bit skeptical about, but I'm finding that as a totally blind person, I don't know, I'm more daring, I think.
I think that's fun.
Yeah, I think that can happen. I do know, too, that there are a group of, on the Potomac in Virginia and Maryland, there are rowing clubs, and I know that many blind people have joined the rowing club and are a part of that. So sailing and rowing are two ways of boating, and, of course, fishing is another pastime and hobby that many people enjoy doing. So there are many ways to enjoy the water, and swimming, of course, as well, or canoeing. Those are opportunities that you can participate in. We here at Blind Industries also take our students on a whitewater rafting, and they get to do that as kind of a confidence builder. So that is another activity. And it was interesting, the instructors would tell us that they loved it when we came because we would listen to the instructions and actually follow them, whereas many of their rafters don't follow the instructions. They kind of panic and think they see these, you know, the water wrapping, going over the rocks, and they think they can determine what to do, so they throw the paddle out and forget to pay attention to what the instructions are, and they have a lot more tip overs and things than we ever had because we're going to listen to what they tell us to do. So it's just kind of interesting when you, we're also saying that when you are in the class that people have to give more detailed instructions, and that's good for the instructor and for the other students because it's another medium in a way to pay attention to how can I get my point across to teach, you know, the instructions that I need for folks to be able to successfully follow them and complete the project.
Yeah.
So it's physically doing the project, whatever it might be, but it's also hearing the instructions and being able to implement them. So it's all of those things in a hobby and in a pastime. And I'm glad you brought up ham radio, and that's a hobby that many people do. And there are many different aspects of ham radio as well, so that's something that can be very enjoyable for a lot of people to participate in.
Yeah.
Are there any other hobbies or pastimes that people want to share? Because there's so many when we start thinking of them.
Yeah. I have another one that I wasn't sure if I would call it a hobby, but in a sense maybe so. It's a little different. You let me know what you think, but I'm interested in so many different things, and while I may not take a college course to find out more about it, but there are like all these different workshops that are given, you know, all around the country, and so I've taken many different workshops trying to understand concepts that may be a little bit different than things that I may have understood before. Something like Ruth said something about being an entrepreneur. I've had my own cafeteria before as a blind person. And so I've taken workshops that helped me to understand the difference between being an employee, a person who owns their job, and a person that's actually leveraging their time and money so that other people's time and money are actually making you money. And so those those distinctions were very important to understanding.
It was 433.
Okay. I've taken workshops on many different things that help me to better understand certain ideas and certain concepts. So some people may consider that a hobby, but I am mm-hmm. very interested in those kinds of things as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, did someone else also have a comment? I think when you started speaking, I heard someone else.
Right, this is Estelle again from Denver.
Okay.
Yeah, one of my main hobbies is music. I am not a good musician, but I just love to be able to sit down and play at the piano. And when I started losing my vision and I couldn't see the notes on the paper, that became a problem because I've never been really good at playing by ear.
Mm-hmm.
So
uh-huh.
I thought about it for a while, and I finally found a blind musician in town here. She's quite well known. Her name is Gail Hamilton. And she, I've taken several lessons from her, and she is showing me how to play without having to look at the music. And it's just really exciting for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a performer, but it's just something that I enjoy myself. So that's possible, I'm sure, for other kinds of instruments or other kinds of music. You don't have to see to be able to play and to enjoy music. So I'd encourage people to try that if they're interested.
Nice. Thank you.
Go ahead, Joe.
First of all, Ruth, and to Ms. Woods, great call. This is a great service, and you guys do a great job. What I've been doing as a hobby before I lost my vision and during my vision loss, now I'm totally blind, I've been learning how to really create the opportunity to aggravate my wife, and I've been doing that for
years.
Working out well. Anyone want to take lessons, let me know. I'll be at National Convention. So.
Thank you for that, Joe. We'll keep you in mind.
But one comment I do want to make. We have a place up in North Jersey that I don't know if they still do it anymore, but they used to have ceramics there and some other hobbies, teaching them things or whatever. And then people would finish that course and then call me up on the phone and go back to their communities, and then wanting to know if there was other blind sites in their local area to go to do what they've learned at this blind school, if you want to call it that.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, you've learned it. Now go into your community, go into your senior centers, and but I'll be the only blind person here. Well, good. Now you can teach other people that blind guys and gals can do this stuff.
Right.
You don't have to just take ceramics with blind people.
Exactly.
You know? So,
right.
But again, anyone wants lessons on how to aggravate their wife, I'm here. Thank you.
Hi, this is Jennifer Uchinow. It's a good thing I was on mute when Joe Ruffalo started because I would have been howling. But I do have a question for the young lady who just spoke about playing the piano without being able to see. And I was wondering if you could please clarify. I'm not sure how I missed that. How you are playing, is it, I don't know. If you could just explain that, please.
I'm not sure if I know what you mean. I have a keyboard. It's an electric keyboard.
Okay.
And I can still see the keys a little bit, although I found when I'm learning music, I do much better if I close my eyes and don't let all that poor vision distract me.
Uh-huh.
And she has taught me how to use different chords. So I can take a song that I know or a piece that I've heard before, and I can put some basic chords to it. And she has shown me how to do that. And it's been quite a, excuse the phrase, it's been an eye-opener for me to be able to do that because I never thought I would be able to play by ear before. So it's been really helpful, and she's a delightful lady to work with too.
Nice.
Jane Degenshine?
Yes, hi.
Hi, you're doing a great job. I love this call. I think it's wonderful. There's a lot of energy and enthusiasm, and we're all learning a lot. I want to speak regarding music. I'm a professional musician by trade.
Right.
I had full sight and played the flute. And through the visual impairment to whatever the other terms are, low vision, all of those other things besides blindness, now blindness, I still perform. I still play. I'm part of a wedding service. I have, fortunately, I have a good memory, and I've retained a lot of things, but I play by ear, and I get hired lots of times, and they're shocked because there's no music stand. Where's your music stand? I'm like, it's up here. And it's a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful thing to be able to perform, or just for your own self, be able to play music. Like she said on the piano, there's beautiful joy in just listening to music. So thank you for letting me share that.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Thank you.
Okay. I would say also here, we're talking about ceramics, but another thing that we did, there was a museum, the Ratner Museum here in Maryland, and they had a program. So they would come out to our sales students, and they would give us a model of something like a lion or a tiger or a elephant or whatever it might be. And then they'd give the student just a hunk of clay and say, okay, now make what you think is your interpretation of this animal. And many of the students said, I've never done this before. I can't do this. I never did this. When I could see, why would I want to do it now? And some of the pieces turned out absolutely fabulous. Then they would take the pieces and they would put them in their kiln because we don't have one. Then they would bring them back. And what we did was we painted them like gold. So they were just one color. But they displayed many of them. We have some that are they put on a backing, and we've got them displayed on the wall here. But they also kept some for the museum so that the museum has them displayed to show people what people can do. So that was kind of a fun activity. It wasn't exactly ceramics, but it was working with clay as a medium.
Yes.
And for many people, it was the first time that they had done that. And I think you have some good points about the spatial, like how long if you're making the elephant, how long do you make the leg or the ear or the trunk or whatever, and how does mine look like? Now, I'm not really very good at this, so mine looked always lopsided, you know, but it was an interesting experience to try to make your own copy of the whatever animal it was, or usually as animals. Sometimes she would say, make a plant or some other kinds of thing. They'd come different times, and each time we'd have a different, you know, kind of assignment that we worked on, plant, animal, whatever it might be. It was kind of fun. But many of them were displayed, and the students were just amazed at how beautiful their pieces were that they actually could create them and own them and do them, you know. And I guess another hobby we haven't talked about is cooking. For some people, cooking is a hobby. You know, we have to eat, so we cook because we have to eat. But for some people, it certainly is a hobby. And people specialize in different things and enjoy that. And there are certainly lots of gadgets out there for people to use to enhance their cooking. So that's another avenue for people to express, I guess, creativity, you know. So
yeah.
Go ahead,
yeah.
Joanne.
Since you said cooking, what I've been doing is going up on the internet and researching, you know, different recipes, you know, trying to spice up my cooking at home. And also I've considered taking a cooking class, and I'm not sure how the people are going to, you know, warm up to me doing that since I don't have vision, but I thought about something like maybe Indian dishes.
Well, you know, Joanne, I took a cooking class. We have a culinary school here in Baltimore, and they were offering Healthy Heart classes, and one of the senior centers gave a little trip, and I went. I was the only blind person. They were surprised that I was there, but of course, when I was in the SAIL program at Blind Industries and the CORE program, we absolutely had cooking. And so they were amazed that, you know, I just had good skills for working in the kitchen, a lot of things that they were trying to get the sighted people to understand about safety and cutting and that kind of thing. They're just skills that I use normally. And I really, you know, as a blind person, incorporated the idea of safety as the very most important thing, and I just keep that in the forefront, and I find that, you know, it really has kept me safe. you know, I really see it as the most important skill to keep in mind. But, I enjoyed it. I loved it. And the cooking class, everything turned out so nicely, and everybody was just amazed that, you know, my stuff, you know, looked just like their stuff, if not better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So go for it, Joanne.
Oh, thank you.
Why not? You know?
Yeah.
You can tell people, too. There are people, for example, blind people, I know at least three or four who are Pampered Chef salespeople.
Okay.
And so that's their, and so with Pampered Chef, usually they show you the products, but then they demonstrate them by you have people make things. So,
yeah.
You know, that's kind of where you can be an entrepreneur and a cook and demonstrate equipment and all kinds of things. So blind people are doing those things.
Yeah. And speaking about some of the skills that you learn when you do hobbies, one of the things that I noticed in my dance class that's really wonderful, because I listen to my instructor, I usually get the new dances before anybody else in the class because I actually listen to what he says. And I'm really clear about my right from my left, and I find so many people who are confused about their right from their left. And it's really funny to me because, you know, I'm just very clear about it. And turning, when you're doing turns, it's real important. If he's saying turn to the right and you actually turn the opposite way, you're going to smash into the person next to you. So it really works well. Again, the instructor has to visualize what he wants me to understand, and then he has to put a vocabulary to it so that, you know, I'm understanding what he says. So he's learning to articulate, and I've been able to absolutely discern the difference from when I first started the class to now, which is a couple of years later.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of an unspoken kind of process. As an instructor in front of everyone, I recognize that it wouldn't be to my advantage to call him out in the classroom, but it's sort of like an unspoken thing with us. I sort of just give him a sign by either getting still or sort of looking towards his voice to let him know that I'm not clear about what he's saying. And I've noticed that if he's having a hard time trying to explain it to me, when he comes back to the next class, he's thought about it and he's more clear. He's more able to articulate it to me. And so I appreciate that. And so we just keep building upon that.
That sounds fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have a student right now in my program who is from India originally, and she was a yoga instructor when she could see, and
okay.
She just informed me today that she's been rehired and she's going to be teaching yoga again. So that's exciting that someone was going back to doing something that they love doing and now doing it as a totally blind person again.
Wonderful.
So that's exciting. To me, that's exciting.
Yeah, it's exciting to hear that. Yeah.
This is Estelle again in Denver.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I have another hobby. I like gardening.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to learn the proper techniques for doing it when I won't be able to see. And I've built a couple of raised gardens out of wood. And
mm-hmm.
that helps. But if anybody else has any clues about, you know, how to do gardening. I also, here in Denver, we've had gallons and gallons of rain over the last week, and consequently, we have lots and lots of dandelions, and I do have some neuropathy, but so far I can see them to pick them out because I don't want to get rid of them. I eat the greens. So any other suggestions that people have for gardening when you can't see, that would be great.
Afraid not for me, this one, not that one.
Okay.
Someone else may.
I think we've done a few different things depending on what we've done. What we've had here in the past for gardens is they're called earth boxes, and I guess what they really are big pots, but they're more squarish. And so we've put Braille labels on them. So like in one we might put mint and one rosemary and one something else. But you know, you could whether if you have a stick of some kind and then put a string across it, like if you do rose by row. So you could, and then you could put a tactile thing if you're not familiar with Braille, or if you are, Braille it, but use it, and you'd probably have to use plastic or an all-weather surface, but to identify, you know, the tomato plants from the radishes or whatever you're planting, but you can do it by rows like that, or I think in Louisiana we had a bigger spot, because it kind of depends on your spot, and we were told to put plastic down in the row, and then what we did was just made a hole in the plastic to put the plant in. So it was easy to kind of label the rows that way, because that, they said that cupped down on the weeds and whatever, and it helped the soil to not get too wet but get wet, you know. So that's what we did there. Now, I'm not a gardener really either, but that's, I think, the extent of my gardening, because I kill my plants, I'm afraid. I give them too much to drink or starve them. But those are two ways that we've done them. You know, because you just need a way to, you know, especially, I guess, if the plants, and you probably know which ones grow bigger, sometimes one will grow and crowd another one out, so you just have to know that, and I'm sure you do, how to do that kind of thing. But gardening can be a wonderful hobby. Is anybody like bird watchers or bird, I guess, birders and things like that? I know people do those kinds of things too. So if it's not watching a bird, it would be listening to the birds and identifying bird sounds, and that can be enjoyable, especially if people like to hike or walk or do those kinds of things. I guess hiking is something that I used to do. I'm not as out as much as I would like to be, but we would do that.
Yeah, this is Shelley in South Carolina. I know when I worked at the Colorado Center for a while, we used to take some classes from a, I can't think of the name of it, that they teach you about birding. And it was very interesting, the sounds and different things. I was thinking also of sewing, using a sewing machine, and I've never I've done enough to be kind of dangerous and know kind of what it is you're supposed to do, but I've never really spent a lot of time to get real crafty at it or skilled at it. But I know that if somebody has ever sewn, there are lots of alternative techniques to, you know, for mending or for using a sewing machine, and that can be a real fun thing. People enjoy seeing their work at doing that, you know.
Karen Fitzpatrick.
Hi, Karen.
Hi. When you mentioned the sewing, I still have some usable sight. I found that putting black tape, you know, on this on the flat surface as a guide for, you know, so that I can have a pretty even seam. So I use that as my guide, and I put the fabric against it. And also I found that they have self-threading sewing machine needles. So I forget where, but I found them online. And that's pretty good, too. You just hold the thread up above it, slide it down, and then back up, and it's locked inside the – because that was my problem before. I couldn't thread the needles.
Okay. That's good to know.
There are also self-threading needles, just self-threading needles, too, that work the same way. I think the NFB sells those. They may sell the sewing machine ones, too. I don't know. In the independence market, that's certainly possible that they do that. And as far as your tape, that's a good method, and it's tactile as well as maybe visual. So you get to use, you know, get used to touching it as well as visually seeing that, you know, the tape to keep the seam, the material against that.
Yeah.
Robert.
Go ahead,
Robert.
So I do birding, and it's something that we do just in the backyard, plus we go down to a forest that's not too far from here. My wife and I would go for long walks. So it's a fairly, you know, easy thing to do if you have a decent ear. And if you have an iPhone, there are different apps that are fairly easy to use to you know, learn the bird calls. That is the Audubon Society that we belong to. They definitely have classes so that you can go participate, you know, in to learn like birding 101 and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, I was going to say when it comes to the gardening, and I was thinking about the way I find the dandelion plants in our yard is I just sit down, you know, on the grass, and you can either use your cane or your hand. And when you sweep it across the grass, the leaves of, you know, the dandelion plants are so different, so uniquely different from the grass that they have a different sound.
Mm-hmm.
And of course,
mm-hmm.
I can also, my touch is still pretty good, but sometimes I'll hear it before I feel it because I'm using my cane to locate them. Or if I'm wiping my hand across the top of the grass, after I've done it enough, my hand's getting kind of tired, maybe a little cold or something, but then you'll hear the flappy sound of the leaves
dandelion.
From the dandelion plant. And of course, I still garden, and a tomato plant still looks like a tomato plant.
Mm-hmm.
And all the new little shoots that start coming up, you know, they still feel like the tops of a carrot or whatever. So it's very easy to distinguish, you know,
mm-hmm.
the weed from the vegetable. So I'm just saying that.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of the sticks and the string to get yourself a nice row, that's definitely, you know, that's a good thing. You know, sighted people use that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
So that still really works good. Hobby-wise, I also do carpentry-related stuff. And sometimes I'll paint. And I'm talking about, like, the shed or we don't paint the house anymore because we have a kind of siding on it. You don't have to paint.
Mm-hmm.
But I used to paint the house. So that actually was relaxing to me to paint the side of a house. And I'm totally blind, and it just has a different feel, you know, as you start getting less and less on your paintbrush. It just has a different sound, different feel, and it's
mm-hmm.
just a fairly easy thing to do. And, of course, with the new kinds of paint, I always have a bucket of water and an old towel. So I'm not at all hesitant to get my fingers right in the paint that I slapped onto the side of the house to just make sure, did I really do the spot over here? Did I miss that? Because once you get your fingers in there, you just swipe back across it with the brush, and then you stick your fingers down in the water, shake them off, and, you know, kind of wipe them off on the towel, and then, you know, that paint comes off really, really, really easy and stuff. So
mm-hmm.
anyway, so that's just some of the things
mm-hmm.
that I like to do. And, of course, walking is a good thing. You know,
mm-hmm.
with someone else or not with someone else. Just with you, your cane, and your brain, you know, sort of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, if anybody have any questions about other, I don't know, guy-related things, at least you think they might be guy things, because there are just as many women doing all these things that I was speaking of. There's no real, I don't know. Because I used to sew, too, and I really do like the self-threading needles, because it's just like putting a clothespin on a clothesline, you know, to get it on the thread. That's the way I look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to crochet, but I haven't done it for a while, so I'd be pretty rusty. I learned to knit at one time, did a couple scarves and that sort of thing, but I haven't done that for a while. But I guess those are, hand, you know, crafting things that, you know, you don't many times think of a guy doing, which some of us do, but it's nice, creative, piece of work. It's fun.
Mm-hmm. You remember Rosie Greer?
Mm-hmm, right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's the guy. Okay.
Yeah.
That's right. Just I've known more female Rosies than guy Rosies. But the first guy I ever met going to the School for the Blind, after I went blind at age 15, I sat down in a room with a couple of the kids, and there was a guy there by the name of Rosie, and he promptly tried to convince me that he was a Martian, which I remember him as that. Anyway, that was good.
There was a kind of a thing that I enjoyed doing when I was sighted, and I discovered that I still enjoy it, which was wrapping gifts. You know,
oh,
everybody
like
uses
that.
Bags now, but I just love to wrap gifts. When I was a kid and I used to go shopping with my mom, we would go to the department stores, and at the gift wrapping centers, I would just stand there and watch them wrap those gifts, and I was always fascinated with it. And I would go home and try to duplicate my own ideas of it. And I got so good at it that our family members used to think that I'd gotten it wrapped at the department stores, but I was doing it. And so I thought that I had to give that up, and I discovered that, you know, I still enjoy it, and you know, it actually looks pretty good. I run into trouble when I've got those wrapping papers that are, you know, have all the designs on it, trying to keep that stuff lined up. But when I'm with the solid colors, I'm pretty good.
Oh, that's fun. I love wrapping gifts. Mm-hmm. That's fun.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of NFB chapters do that as fundraisers at Christmas time in Denver. We used to do that. Barnes & Noble would allow us to have a station there, and we'd use their paper.
Okay.
And then we'd wrap the gifts for individuals that had just purchased items. And it was a means of informing people of the NFB, and then it was also you could collect donations if people were wanting to do that. So
yes, that's great.
It is a very visible thing, and it's, yeah, I like it. It's really fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does anyone have any other things to share? We've thought of a lot of different topics here, and there may be still some others people do or enjoy or know of other people who are doing them and how they do them. No? Okay. Well, I do know other people do different. You talked about line dancing, and I do know that people do ballroom dancing and square dancing and other kinds of dancing. And many years ago, but when my kids were little, and I said, well, we should be doing something, and I said, we go out to dinner sometimes, and that's nice, but we should be doing something. So we joined a club that did country dancing, which was like British country dancing. It's kind of like square dancing, but it isn't a square. It's more like in a line, but it's couples and doing different things, kind of like the Virginia Reel in a way, like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, too. It was a lot of fun to do. And I also found that people didn't always know their left from their right, and you have to do that in that dance because you exchange partners a lot. But it was a lot of fun. It was very enjoyable to do that kind of dancing, and it was a different group of people, and they were all ages and backgrounds. Right. So hobbies can open up meeting people of different backgrounds and perspectives, and can be very a way to meet new neighbors and friends and try something new. So
yeah.
I'd say be adventuresome and try something. Never hurts to try, you know. And sharing your experiences. And probably there is someone out there who's done doing what you want to do and can share some tips. These are things that can be shared on the senior listserv or, you know, just through your chapters or your other groups of people meeting. So I encourage people to encourage other blind people to keep doing things and learning new hobbies and new pastimes as they come along.
Mm-hmm. And Ruth, I also think that it's real important that blind people mingle in the community and not
mm-hmm.
just...
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's important because I think you know, the community, they don't know. They really don't know, and they have all these preconceived notions. And it's really funny. It takes, you know, being around people and doing things to help break down some of that without it being a limit. You know, and I think you form connections and relationships, and people are just more open to hear what you've got to share. And so I think it works in a good way for everybody. Mm-hmm.
It does, and many times you can be the teacher as well as the student.
Exactly, exactly.
So it's a shared experience that way.
Mm-hmm.
I guess there's something else I'm not sure I heard this being touched on, but I know several of my friends, and we go to football games and basketball games and hockey games. it's, you know, being there and the atmosphere is just it's electric. It's just a kick just for the atmosphere.
Yes.
But of course, for the blind person to really get onto what's happening there, you really can't listen to it and get much by, you know, the announcer that's in the stadium. So what you need, and you really can't get it, if you ever watch on TV, you really can't listen to those TV announcers. They always say, look at that, you know.
Right,
so you
right.
got to have the radio and tune in to where it's being broadcast over the radio, because they are doing it for, well, no one is able to see what they're seeing. So they do a very good verbal description of what's going on. So we always make sure we have our radios and tuned in, you know, to a broadcast from a radio station. So that's how you get. And of course, the food in all these stadiums, it's maybe not the healthiest, but that's always pretty tasty
right.
stuff too.
You bring up something very important, which is a very good point, something I had forgotten about. So I thank you for sharing that. But the year that I spent in India, we created radio programs. So it was just the most fascinating and fun thing to write the script and then to actually produce our own radio programs. And, you know, there's something wonderful about being able to do that. You know, it's a lot of times I'm looking for things that are audio described, but to be a part of, you know, describing something that for listeners is really wonderful. I really appreciate that. So that was fun. And I, after I left India, I've not done that anymore. So I don't know if there are people around that are doing that kind of thing as a hobby, but I might start looking for that again, because that was really a lot of fun.
There's one other thing I just mentioned real quick is, you know, movies, definitely like to go to movies. And, of course, seeing how the described feature has been out here for several years, once you get used to that, you don't want to go to a movie that doesn't really have it. So it's, you know, the AMC theaters and the Marcus theaters, you know, they have the described feature. So that's it's crazy. You get a little handset and this little radio and I always take my own earphones because the ones that they have aren't as good, I guess. You have to kind of press them up against your head to really be able to hear.
Mm-hmm.
So I always get the kind that fits into my ear.
Right.
Okay, was that Rebecca Irving I heard?
Yes.
Yes, go ahead.
Thing we do here in New Jersey, once a month, a group of us get together and we bowl. We go bowling. We don't have a league. It's just we get together for fun, and we go bowling, and they give us what, you know, if we need 2-3 hours, they give it to us, and they accommodate us very well. Some might use the guards, and some might use the ramp, and some just bowl, you know, because they're bowlers, and we have a lot of fun. And not only bowling, we also have a bingo club where we play bingo. Using the Braille bingo cards and the chips. And it's a lot of fun things to do as blind people.
Yeah.
Joanne,
Jeff. I agree. Thank you for that. I've not done the bowling, but I know that it's out there. I have done the bingo and found that it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
Joanne Johnson.
Hi, Joanne.
On the bowling, that's a good thing. We did that as a fundraiser in our chapter, and what I did was made some simulators for our family members and friends, like the vision that you know, the members had. So the sighted people would put on those simulators and bowl, and that had the family the opportunity to see how, you know, their family members saw. My daughter put on, I have RP, and she put on the simulator I made, and she said, well, I don't see anything but, you know, this, through this little tiny hole. And I said, well, that's exactly how I see it. You know, they had an opportunity to go like that. And they
very
really,
nice.
That sounds good. That's interesting.
So the simulators were like glasses?
Yeah, what I did, I went and got safety goggles. And so if a person had, you know, macular, I just cut out a little white square and I'd paste it on there, you know, so they could have that little tiny, you know, peripheral vision around square. And then for the RP, I covered the entire hole but left a little tiny hole in the center for people with RP. And then we had sleep shades for, you know, if a family member was totally blind. And some people they swapped. You know, they wanted to bowl with all, you know, all the different,
Wow, that's a great idea.
Yeah, so we did that for a couple of years, and everyone really enjoyed it, especially with family members. And we even invited volunteer groups. We tried to get with a bowling league, but we never did get the opportunity to do that. But that's something that people may want to do, too.
That's fun. Okay. That's a great idea.
Can I ask a question?
Robert, I think it was Robert, talked about going to the sporting events.
Yes, Robert.
And I go to a lot of plays. I didn't even mention that. So I guess that really is a thing that I enjoy doing. And they have audio described at a lot of the places that I go to. And there's also an organization here in Maryland that I've called and let them know that I'm going to, like, a community play or something. And they'll go and get familiar with it and talk to the people that are putting it on, and they'll let them come in for the rehearsals or whatever. And then when I come for the actual performance, they're there, and they describe to me what's going on after they describe the, you know, the scenery and the setting of the stage, whatever. And so that's been, you know, phenomenal for me, not just for the major events, but for the, you know, community, like family members, the kids are putting on a play, like the kindergartners or whatever. And it's really nice because they come and they describe that, too, and it's wonderful.
Sounds good.
Oh. Robert here again. I just want to say one thing about these simulator things. You know, if it's, I guess if you introduce it right and give everybody on the right mindset, I guess I want to say, because, you know, if you think about it, it really could backfire on you if you didn't watch it, because, you know, these people that are trying these different types of blindness, they haven't had, they're not used to it. They have no blindness skills, let alone any kind of emotional adjustment to it. So they really could walk away thinking, oh, my God, I better not let them do this or this, because, you know, we're trying to even use that kind of vision for bowling. Oh, my God, you know. Anyway, if it's handled right, it could be fun, but you just got to really kind of watch that, because it could really just go to, I don't know.
You make a good point. Have you ever heard of Dining After Dark? There's I've worked a couple of those fundraisers, and I was the actual server, but a lot of the patrons who pay for the dinners, they give you like a brief 5-minute period of total darkness, because there are people there who absolutely freak out not being able to see anything. They can't sit there in total darkness and have their meal. So they give everybody a chance to figure out if they're going to panic or not. And, you know, it's really difficult for some people to do that. I think their mindset about it. But some people will get up and leave. They won't stay for the dinner, but it is sort of a way of simulating, and it's really kind of interesting to see how people who have been sitting there with sight, having, you know, whatever their meal is, and then when they go into the total darkness, they can't find their drinks anymore, they don't know what they're eating, they don't even know what they're putting it in their mouths, and they can't figure out what it tastes like, because they're just so, you know, disoriented by losing that comfortable, familiar sight. But yeah,
interesting point. Did someone have a question? I think a lady asked a question a few minutes ago.
Yeah, for the young lady that was talking about the bowling for fundraiser. How would you how would you raise funds in doing that? How would you go about setting your prices?
Oh, this is Joanne. What we did was we would ask the bowling alley, you know, how much it would cost to, you know, to bowl a game, and then we just kind of upped our prices. Yeah, and we were going to do something with a league, and then that league would, you know, raise money for us, you know, to do that. And just like some of the bowling, you know, when you get your sheets and you go and ask people for, I forget what you call it, you know, a certain amount of money.
To sponsor you for a certain.
Yeah, right.
Oh,
and they
advised
that we could do that also.
Oh, that's easy. That sounds good.
And there's an exhibit called Dialogue in the Dark. Yeah, there's an exhibit called Dialogue in the Dark, and I worked that. And you go through these different scenarios, and then at the end, in the cafe, they would, you know, you would divulge to the people that you're, you know, blind or visually impaired, and then people could ask you questions.
Okay.
You know, so that was kind of helpful at the end,
mm-hmm,
that
mm-hmm.
they were amazed that we could, you know, guide them through this experience. And then at the
mm-hmm.
end, they had a chance to talk about it and
right,
ask us questions about, you know,
mm-hmm.
our blindness and things
mm-hmm.
like that. So that was helpful at the end to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Very informative. Thank you so much. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Ruth, this has been a very, very exciting call, and I was just so happy I was able to come in on it. So I thank you so much for these calls, because they're very informative and as well as very helpful. So I thank
well,
you
good,
very
and
much.
You can let me know via the senior listserv what other topics you'd like to have. And if you are able to facilitate a call, that would be helpful too. So I'm looking for what people would like to have, you know, topics discussed, and for facilitators who would want to help moderate the phone calls. And I think our time is just about up. So is there any other last, you know, questions or comments or things we haven't covered that someone wants to share?
I think it's
no.
been great. Thank you very,
yeah,
very
I
much.
Yeah, I would just agree. It's been very good.
Yeah.
Yeah.